Exactly. You know, as I said, how does the head of government ask the head of state for reparations for the state that the head of state is the head of state of? But anyway, we have to go. Thank you. We'll do this again next time. All right?
Definitely. All right.
Good. One love.
Yeah, love.
Good. And Ian, thank you very much. In a couple of minutes, it will be Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund. We want to thank you so very much for tuning in, listening to this program, which is Labrish, which you have been listening to. We'll be back next week with another edition of the program. Labrish is produced by Ian Forrest with assistance from Kuduzo Kaimbili and is a The Jazz Mac production. What were they? Right or so? Sprung. Yes, Peter. Remember to tell the people whom you love that you love them and show affection. With love, we'll find unity and strength. One love, walk good. Happy birthday, Miss Chin. Bye.
On one foundation, got to build our love. On one foundation, got to build our love. On one foundation,
there will never be, yeah, no love at all. There will never be no love at all. I've got to put aside name segregation. Got to put aside name organization. Got to put aside them denomination. There will never be no love at all. All. So build our love on one foundation. Come let us build our love on one solid foundation. Got to build our love on one foundation. Oh, there will never be a single drop. We are birds of a feather. We got to come together, 'cause we are birds of a feather. We got to come together, 'cause we are birds of a feather. Or there will never be no
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a Saturday morning program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. This morning, Tales of Two Shekels, Robert and Alyssa. Stay tuned.
blessed is the man that enjoys she. Oh, pleasant thoughts come to my mind as I turn down the sheets of pine, and I see now two breasts standing so like two white hills all covered with snow.
And a woven missile.
minor mistake playing the same song twice. I was searching by word. To explain, I mean, let's go backwards. That was listed as The Weaver, not as The Wee Weaver, which is how I know that song from Steel Ice Band. And maybe we'll hear that later, but I figure not, you know, within the same 10-minute block there. Before that, Matty Pryor and June Tabor doing For Loom Weaver from the album Silly Sisters. And prior to that, Matty Pryor, of course, Steel Ice Band, The Weaver and the Factory Maid, and almost redundantly, Wee Weaver. And of course, we began the show with The Space Fleet from the soundtrack of the motion picture Silent Running, music by Peter Schickele. So, yes, I should have closed with a song from The Weavers so that we would have been consistent with the constant theme. But I was duped. I didn't have... I'm playing all of this off of one portable hard drive, you see, so I wasn't able to preview that song. Although it's a very, very nice rendition. Maybe we will hear it later. But, you know, not uncommon in folk music for one song to have two titles, even when it's the same performer doing it. At any rate, with all of this blathering going on, you know that you're tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifico Radio, New York City, WBAI, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and webcasting over WBAI.org. And this program is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. This is a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, and related fields of endeavor. And we are going to dedicate this morning to one of my favorite all-time writers and, newly discovered by me, his daughter. More on that in a little while. But tonight, well, Max is all agog because the original crew from Mystery Science Theater 3000 is performing live. And I don't know, it's at the Nokia Theater on 44th Street. And according to Max, he was telling me, yeah, one can still get seats. And if I were so inclined, I would do that. Many others of you, I would hope. I'm going to bring my coffee over here. There we are. Many others of you, I take it, are going to watch or record off of BBC America the American premiere of Season 5, as they call it, Doctor Who. I call it Season 32. But who's counting? Why, you know, yes, it was a reboot, but why they had to call it 1 with Chris Eccleston, 2, 3, and 4 with David Tennant, and then 4 specials that didn't really constitute a season. So this is even Season 5. And it's a very big deal because it's a new Doctor again, as happens whenever actors decide to leave the series. And David Tennant figured his time was up. And it's not, you know, 3 years is a respectable amount of time for anybody playing the Doctor. But tonight is Matt Smith. He is the youngest of them all, 26 years old. You know, we started with William Hartnell, who was, you know, well into his 60s. And we have been progressively usually getting younger, and, you know, with Christopher Eccleston, then David Tennant, and now this kid, Matt Smith. And I have watched the first 2 episodes that were broadcast in England, and the first of which will be shown on BBC America tonight. BBC America, of course, is not non-commercial the way BBC is. And I always suspect, and I have actually seen, at least on certain rebroadcasts of David Tennant's stuff, that, you know, little snippets, they may only be 2 or 3 seconds, little snippets may be missing So I really prefer to watch them in their original broadcast form. However, this is well worth it. Now, what is tonight's episode entitled The 11th Hour? This being the 11th Doctor. Like, well, I thought it was pretty decent. I didn't think it was spectacular. It really felt... There's actually a review in the New York Times of tonight's episode I was pleased to see. And the reviewer, I forgot who reviewed it, he and I pretty much agree that basically this is very comfortable. You know, different shoes and all that. But Matt Smith's Doctor is very, very similar to David Tennant's Doctor, and that's both comfortable and, to me, a little distressing, because I always think the Doctor should be very different from one to the next. There's no similarity between, well, no, I shouldn't say there's no similarity, but the John Pertwee Doctor is very, very different than the Tom Baker Doctor. The Chris Eccleston Doctor is very different from the David Tennant, but this Doctor is very similar to the David Tennant. And David Tennant was very, very popular, so I think that was intentional. The story is good. The new companion is good. There are issues. There are problems. There's two of the problems I had are two of the same problems that the fellow in the New York Times had. The Doctor trying out what food he would now like. And it's being a little bit, oh, you know, let's amuse the kids, because the show is somewhat geared for kids, you know, by spewing food on the floor. And, what's the other bit? Oh, yes, talking to all these people, including a real-life scientist on a monitor. It's a bit of pandering in the storyline. But overall, it's not bad. And what is really good and really fun is the introduction of the new companion. Amy Pond is played by Karen Gillan. And she has a lot of promise. In the second episode, the one that we broadcast in the United States next week, there is a change. We learn a little bit more about our companion, and she has certain mysteries involving what she is supposed to be doing before she gets whisked away into outer space. And the Doctor did something that I thought was really good. He was ornery. He got really PO'd at a situation and showed it. It wasn't just like temporary annoyance or something like that, or mad, righteously mad, which he was for a good reason when you see the episode. But he was talking down to humans. Because he is, after all, a Time Lord. And this is something that the David Tennant and Chris Eccleston characters never did, that virtually all of the other Doctors did. They acted superior. They are superior. They know it. They show it, these Time Lords, the Doctor, who is all these different characters. And this one showed it. It harkened back to the old Doctors Who. And I liked that a lot. Anyway, premieres tonight, BBC America. I do recommend it. And I had a lot of fears about what this Doctor would be like, but it looks like it's going to go somewhere good. And Stephen Moffat being, you know, taking over the show. We'll see. He'll have his strengths and weaknesses, as did Russell Davies. More on this, because I am a fanboy of this stuff. Okay. One of my favorite writers as I was growing up and reading is Robert Sheckley. I love short stories, of course. This show has largely, my use of the show has largely been predicated and based around short stories. And there are no small amount of radio dramas based on Sheckley. And I've wanted to do one myself based on a fragment from a novel that was later published as a short story, Street of Dreams, Feet of Clay. And any number of times I've read a story, The Prize of Peril, on the air, which I think is, this is written in the 50s, and it is about today's reality shows in so many ways, and it has been, how to put this, ripped off any number of times, including in... I believe it is, without that story having been written, one would not have, for example, The Running Man with Schwarzenegger, that film, and that whole premise. And there is, except that there is sort of a sly humor in The Running Man, but in Sheck Lee's stuff, it is satirical, sharp, biting humor. And when he passed away 5 years ago, I did almost 2 months of programming based on Sheck Lee stories. And then not long ago, at the KGB Fantastic Fiction Reading Series, as produced by, curated, I should say. Well, they don't tend to use the word curated. We have always used that at the New York Review of Science Fiction Series, although I think maybe because I've been using it, they started using it. Now, they are the curators, okay, and producers. One way or the other, the people are Ellen Datlow and Matt Kressel. Both regular listeners to this program should be familiar with both of them. And I didn't even quite realize who, I didn't know who was reading that night. I just go and always happily attend. Oh, yes, and by the way, they've got a good one, coming up this Wednesday. Richard Bose, and Jeffrey Ford. You don't get better than that. I'll give you all the information after we hear the... Sheck Lee radio drama. But lo and behold, one of the people reading, I forget what the last name was that she used, Alyssa something, and then she said, well, this story I'm going to read is published under the name Alyssa Sheck Lee. I'm using my father's name. I'm going, wow, this is Sheck Lee's daughter. I wonder if she can write. Well, she could write. And you're going to hear that later. You're going to hear her performance at KGB. But I thought I would pair that up with an X-1 based on her father's work. So, two Sheck Lees, two stories. We're going to start out with one entitled Bad Medicine. And I'm even going to say I hope you like it. I am pretty sure that you will like it. Enjoy. Ah, that is, if one can get the equipment in here working properly. So I think I know what's wrong. Let's try that again. Bad Medicine, X-1, Robert Sheck Lee, enjoy.
In just a moment, X-1. But first, after a hard day's work, there's nothing more welcome than an evening of variety entertainment. That's just the tonic provided tomorrow night by NBC Radio. You'll laugh your cares away when good-natured contestants carry out the rib-tickling stunts dreamed up by MC Jack Bailey on NBC's Truth or Consequences. Later on, Groucho Marx peps things up with lots of spontaneous good fun and more of the friendly insults at which he is so accomplished. For a brighter, livelier evening tomorrow night, it's Groucho Marx and Truth or Consequences on this station. Now stay tuned for X-1 on NBC.
Countdown for blast off. X-5, 4, 3, 2. X-1, fire.
And let me just voice over and mention, by the way, this comes from July 10th of 1956.
From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future. Adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X minus one.
Tonight, Bad Medicine by Finn O'Donovan. But first, farmers know
Finn O'Donovan, of course, is a pseudonym for Robert Shankly.
But they can make sure things like that can't ruin them by investing in United States savings bonds. Not only farmers, but over 40 million Americans in all sorts of jobs own 40 billions of savings bonds. And why? Because savings bonds are the easy way to start saving and to keep saving. And the money you invest in savings bonds mean protection now and ready cash when you need it in the future. Improving the farm, sending the youngsters to college, or planning your own retirement. These are the big things you can be ready for with savings bonds. And besides offering you a safe investment, each Series E savings bond pays you back $4 at maturity for every $3 you invest. Yes, you earn extra dollars while you save, so start saving now. For the big things in your life, be ready with United States Savings Bonds. And now, on with our story. On May 2nd, 2103, Elwood Caswell walked rapidly down Broadway. It was a gentle, misty spring day, and the air held the smell of rain and blossoming trees. But Elwood Caswell didn't smell the rain and the trees. He just gripped the loaded gun he had in his pocket. He didn't want to use the weapon, but he was certain that he would. This was justifiable. You see, Elwood Caswell was a homicidal maniac.
Why shouldn't I kill him?
Hey, look out, will you?
Oh, sorry, sir. Only the other day he said to me, Elwood, you're looking very well. What business is it of his how I look?
Hey there, Elwood! Elwood!
Huh?
It's me, Marty Klein. I work on the jet buses with you, remember?
Oh, yeah, of course. Hello, Marty. Forgive me, my mind was on other things.
Yeah, I know how it is. A couple of weeks ago, I was walking around in a fog so thick you could cut it.
Yeah, really?
Sure. Preoccupied, you know. I had this idea in my mind.
You too?
Yeah.
The same person?
Huh?
Were you troubled by the same person?
My wife. Hey, you okay?
Oh, yeah. Yes, of course.
Well, I had this idea, see? I was going to get rid of my wife.
Kill her?
Kill her? I mean, send her to a country for a week.
Oh.
You sure you ain't sick?
No, I never felt better.
Well, anyway, I was going to take a week off. Quit the jet buses. Hey, can you imagine? I've been a jet bus operator for 10 years now, and all of a sudden, I feel like I can't take it for another minute.
I know how you feel.
And I was going to take a trip, all by myself.
A trip?
To where? To the farthest place I could think, to Mars. I was just going to pick up and take a vacation on Mars. Silly, huh?
I don't know. What happened?
Well, I talked it over with Ethel.
Your wife?
Yeah. Ethel, she's a real sensible girl. You know what she did?
No, am I supposed to?
Ethel went right down to that home therapy appliance store, and she says, you got a home therapy machine that'll cure my husband of this idea he can't stay on the jet buses?
I've heard that those machines aren't perfected.
They got them licked now. So, okay, she describes the trouble, and next day they deliver this thing, and boom, I plug it in, see?
And?
And a voice talks to me. It starts asking me questions.
Yeah, what kind of questions?
All kinds. Things I won't even tell my own mother.
You told the machine?
Why not? It's only a machine.
Yeah, I see your point.
Well, then the machine starts to tell me a few things. And before I knew it, inside a week, I'm cured. Now, I can't wait to go back driving the jet buses.
You don't say.
So that's why I say I know how it is to have one thing on your mind all the time like that.
This machine, what did it cost you?
That's the beauty part of it. My Ethel. Boy, she's a smart girl. After a week, she sends it back, see? She says it don't work. So all we lose is the deposit.
I see.
Well, I gotta get back to work now. Hey, Ain't you working the jet buses today?
Huh? No, I'm off today.
Well, I'll see you, Elwood.
Yeah, see you, Marty. What was the name of that place?
Where they sell the home therapy machines.
Yeah.
Home therapy appliances. It's right down Broadway, about two blocks from here. So long, Elwood.
Perspiring freely, Elwood Caswell continued down Broadway toward 43rd Street. His friend Magnuson would be finishing work soon, returning to his apartment less than a block from Caswell's. Elwood gripped the gun tighter. How pleasant it would be to saunter in, exchange a word with him, and then...
No. No, I won't do it. I don't really want to kill anybody. It isn't right. Think what'll happen. The authorities will lock me up. My friends won't understand, and... Mother. Mother would never approve. Still, if I see Magnuson, if I see his hateful, accusing face in front of me... Oh, this must be the store. Yeah. Home therapy appliances.
Good afternoon, sir. Can I show you some of our home therapy appliances?
I want therapy. Quick.
Of course, sir. This way, please. Now then, this is our new alcoholic reliever, built by International Combustion Motors and advertised in leading magazines. A handsome piece of furniture. I think you will agree, and not out of place in any home. It also opens into a television set.
Look, what I need...
Therapy, of course. I just want to point out this model need never cause embarrassment to you, your friends, or your loved ones. Notice, if you will, the recessed dial which controls the desired degree of alcoholism. You see, heavy, moderate, social... Light and teetotal. A new feature unique in mechanotherapy.
I'm not alcoholic. The New York Jet Bus Authority does not hire alcoholics.
Oh, sorry. You seem the type. No offense.
Please.
You seem rather nervous. Perhaps the portable anxiety reducer.
No.
Well, sir, perhaps if you told me just what you feel is bothering you.
What have you got for homicidal mania?
I beg your pardon.
Homicide? The urge to kill someone.
Oh, of course. Well, let's see now.
Pardon me. Have you worked here very long?
A week. Oh, yes, here's the ticket. This black job with the chrome trim.
What is it?
This, sir, is a Rex regenerator, built by Planetary Motors Corporation. Handsome, hmm? Goes with any decor. Opens into a well-stocked little bar, so your family, friends, loved ones need never...
Will it cure homicidal urge, a strong one?
Oh, absolutely. Don't confuse this with the little 10-amp neurosis model. This is a hefty, heavy-duty, 25-amp machine for really deep-rooted conditions.
That's what I've got.
Well, this baby will jolt you out of it. Big, heavy-duty thrust bearings, oversized heat absorbers, completely insulated. Sensitivity range
I'll
over...
I'll take it.
Yes, sir.
With me, right now.
Now?
Before it's too late. I'll pay cash.
Well, yes, sir. It'll be a few hours before the warehouse can...
I'll take this one here.
Well, that's a floor demonstrator.
Does it work?
All of our demonstrators work, sir.
Then I'll take it. I can't wait for a warehouse. I can't wait for anything. Have it put in a taxi for me.
Yes, sir.
Tell them to hurry. I want to kill my friend Magnuson, you know.
Who?
My friend Magnuson.
Oh, of course. That'll be $400.59, sales tax included.
After Elwood Caswell left the store, the clerk, whose name was Haskins, smiled to himself and lighted a cigarette. He had made his first sale. He inhaled.
Haskins?
Yes, Miss Follinsby?
Smoking? I asked you to rid yourself of that filthy habit.
Immediately, Mr. Follinsby. I'll use one of those display model denicotinizers at once. By the way, I just made a rather good sale, sir.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir. One of our big Rex regenerators.
Well, now, it isn't often we... Wait a minute. Where's the floor model?
Well, sir, the customer was in an awful hurry. He was going to kill his friend.
You gave him the floor model?
Yes, sir. Was there any reason why...
Oh, grief, Haskins. Didn't I inform you we never sell a floor model?
But, sir...
Good heavens, I've got to get to him. What was his address?
Address?
His name, then.
Well, he didn't say.
Then his check.
But he paid cash.
You mean you just let him pick up the machine and walk out?
Well, sir, he paid cash.
He was homicidal, you say?
Yes, sir, his friend...
I don't care about his friend. Get the police. No. Call the Planetary Motor Security Division. Quick.
Yes, at once.
Well.
Excuse me, Mr. Follinsby. What will I tell them?
Tell them, you fool. Tell them that one of our customers accidentally got that display regenerator they sent us. The one they shipped by accident. They were going to replace it tomorrow.
Yes, sir. The one they shipped by accident. Will they know?
If they don't be more explicit, tell them we've sold the Martian model. The one for treating psychotic Martians.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Elwood Caswell had returned to his apartment and lugged the big black Rex regenerator into his living room. He put it down near the couch and studied it carefully.
He was right. It does go with the room. Now then, let's see those instructions. Place regenerator near a comfortable couch. All right. Plug in machine. There. Affix contact band to your forehead. That's all there is to it. Just turn on the machine and it will do the rest. There will be no language problem since your regenerator communicates with you by direct sensory contact, patent pending. Well, that seems easy enough. Now, I'll just put the contact on my head. And... blast it. Hello?
Elwood?
Yes?
This is Henry. Henry Magnuson. How are you, old boy?
I'm fine.
I wondered if you were doing anything tonight. Thought you might like to drop over for a game of chess.
Game of chess, huh? You stupid oaf.
What?
Nothing.
I thought you called me a stupid oaf.
Yeah, just talking to my cat.
Oh, I didn't remember you had a cat. I thought you hated cats.
Oh, I do. This isn't really mine. It's a neighbor's. It keeps coming in.
Oh. What about tonight?
Will you be alone?
Well, yeah.
You haven't mentioned to anyone that you're inviting me over?
Not a soul. Why?
Someone's looking for me, a process server.
Oh.
Yeah, I've been avoiding him for days. I don't even leave word where I'll be when I go out.
You can trust me, Elwood. I'm your best friend.
Yes, you are. But not for long.
Huh?
Just talking to the cat again.
Oh. Well, will you be over?
Yeah.
In about an hour, okay?
Yeah, an hour will be fine. There are a few things I have to do
first. I've just gotten some new laugh records from the boys at the office. I got something here that'll really kill you. So long, Elwood.
So long. I've got something here that'll kill you, too.
X-1 will continue in 1 minute.
Each of us has a personal reason for wanting to see cancer conquered. Steve Allen would like to tell you his.
I have a wife and three wonderful kids. And when I think about cancer going to strike one American in every four, well, that's more than enough reason for wanting to see it conquered. I know that some people don't even want to think about cancer, but pretending it's not a threat, doing an ostrich routine, isn't going to get us anywhere. We've got to stand up to it and fight. We can fight, each and every one of us. Through the American Cancer Society, we can be part of the battle that someday will beat cancer once and for all. That day will come, but you and I have got to help. How about it?
Thank you, Steve Allen. Remember, fight cancer with a checkup and a check. See your doctor once a year for a checkup. It's your best cancer insurance. And to help conquer cancer, send a check to your unit of the American Cancer Society. Make it generous.
And now, on with our story. Taking the revolver from his pocket, Elwood laid it on the table in front of him. His face became suffused with hatred at the thought of Magnuson. He poked at the gun with a stiff forefinger.
Magnuson, you no good, shifty-eyed enemy of all that's decent in the world. The man who ruined my sister Irene. The man who... Wait a minute. Wait a minute, Elwood. You have no sister, remember? No sister. Now, before you go off and commit murder, why not just try that machine just once, huh? Turn it on. Okay, now reach over and...
Good afternoon, Elwood. I am your mechanical therapist. You may call me Gloop.
Gloop?
You seem surprised. It is a perfectly common name here on this planet.
Gloop, of course. I've heard it many times.
Now then, I am scanning the material in your preconscious with the intent of synthesis, diagnosis, prognosis, and treatment.
Yes?
I find... this is a most unusual case.
Really? I thought it was simple homicidal mania.
There is, of course, no such thing. You are obviously hallucinating a set of symptoms. Nonsense syllables to enable you to avoid the real problem.
Oh?
A most unusual set of symptoms, I must say.
Your pilot light seems to be fading.
My light is not fading. I am merely trying to relate your symptoms to proven theory.
Well, as long as you know what you're doing.
Mechanotherapy is an exact science, Elwood. It admits of no significant errors. We will proceed.
Good.
First, the word association test.
Fire away.
I will proceed to give a word. You answer with the first thing that comes to your mind. Ready?
Ready.
House.
Home.
Planet.
Earth.
Just musing. Now, fleeful.
Fleeful?
Fleeful.
That sounds like a Martian word.
Just give me a response.
Fleeful, Okay. I can make them up, too. Marfouche. That's a pretty good one, huh? Made it up in the spur of the moment.
Marfouche is very significant. It is a corruption of the Martian concept of fush clib. Very significant.
I don't know any Martian words.
Aha, noteworthy. We will proceed. Loud.
Soft.
Green.
Mother.
Thanagoyas.
Pathamathunga. How's that one?
At ease.
Nexothesmodrustica. Top that.
Katith a snow-hell gnoptices.
Okay. Rigamaroo, Kalamazoo, Iggity-bibbity-boo.
Good. It fits the pattern.
Pattern?
Your neurosis. I can diagnose it now.
Go on.
You have a classic case of theme desire, complicated by strong dwarkish intentions.
I could have sworn I was homicidal.
The term has no referent. It must be rejected as nonsense. Now, if you'll just settle back on the couch, we'll proceed.
At precisely this moment, a tall, gnarled, ugly man pushed his way through the doors of Home Therapy Appliances. His clothing, unpressed and uncaring, hung on him like corrugated iron. When the clerk, Hoskins, approached him, he flipped back his lapel to show a small silver badge underneath.
Sir?
John Rath, Planetary Motor Security Division.
Oh, yes, sir. Mr. Follansbee.
Yes, sir. Hello, Follansbee.
Mr. Rath.
Well?
So far, we haven't a single lead.
You certainly never mentioned his name?
Oh, yes, sir.
Now, think. Is there anything significant?
Is it serious, Mr. Rath?
Mr. Follansbee, this man is homicidal.
Won't it treat him?
Homicide is unknown on Mars. It'll treat him for the most likely Martian sickness.
What would that be?
Theme desire, Mr. Follansbee.
Theme desire?
It's a Martian illness in which the victim feels cursed by the tree-like nourishing parent, although, of course, Martians don't have parents in the ordinary sense. Well, Haskins?
I remember one thing. He mentioned he was a jet bus operator for the New York Jet Bus Authority.
Ah.
One other thing.
Yes?
I believe, yes, he was alcoholic.
An alcoholic jet bus operator. Excellent. It'll be on his records. Get the Jet Bus Authority at once.
But surely, Elwood, you remember your Gorisi.
No.
Tell me then about your juvenile experiences with the Thorastrian fleet.
Never had one.
Complete blockage.
My father...
There is no such thing, of course.
But...
I thought we'd finally agreed on that.
Okay, if you say so.
Now then, since you claim you don't even know what a Gorisi is, tell me what you imagine it to be.
A forest fire. A salt tablet. A small screwdriver. Am I getting warm? A revolver? What the heck is a Gorisi?
Why, the tree that nourished you into puberty.
No tree nourished me.
You have completely repressed the experience.
No tree ever nourished me.
Mr. Caswell, let me try to explain your case as best I can. Somewhere in your childhood, your Gorisi, or parent tree, stifled your theme desire. Now, this gave rise to your present urge to dwark someone in a Flendish manner.
To what?
To dwark someone in a Flendish manner.
Listen, you crummy piece of hardware. I have never had a Gorisi. I have no desire to dwark someone in a Flendish manner or any other manner. All I want to do is put a bullet into Herbert Magnuson. Understand? All I want to do is kill Magnuson.
Lie down, Mr. Caswell. We'll go over it again.
My dear man, I'm not trying to insinuate that the Jet Bus Authority hires alcoholics. If you will just...
Any luck?
It's a dead end. Now, Haskins.
Yes, sir.
A man's life may be at stake here. Now think. Was there anything else this fellow said to you? Anything?
Well, He did mention the name of his friend.
Of which friend?
The one he was going to kill.
The one he... Why didn't you say so? Now, what was it?
Magnuson.
You sure?
That's it. He said, I'm going to kill Magnuson. You know, just casually like that.
Follinsby, see if there's a Magnuson in the Manhattan phone book. Now, hurry it up.
Yes, Mr. Caswell, you were saying?
Well...
Something about your Gorosy?
Yes, I was saying I think perhaps you're right.
Naturally. But right about what, Mr. Caswell?
Well, I think perhaps... Yes, I think perhaps I do remember my Gorosy.
Ah, now, Mr. Caswell, we're on the road to a cure.
Mr. Magnuson?
Yes?
Do you know a short, angry-looking, red-haired man?
I might.
Thank heaven.
Or I might not.
Can you tell us where to locate him?
You're a process server, huh?
Certainly not.
Don't kid me.
Mr. Magnuson, this man is trying to kill you.
Go on. You're full of happy pills. Elwood's my best friend.
Elwood?
He loves me like a brother. And if you think I'm going to sic some process server onto
him... Mr. Magnuson, I'm not a process server. Your friend Elwood is a psychopathic killer. You're his intended victim. Can you get that through your thick skull? I'm trying to save your life.
Yes?
You're Elwood Caswell?
Yes.
The Elwood Caswell who bought a Rex regenerator early this afternoon?
Yes. Won't you come in?
Thank you. My name is Rath, Planetary Motors.
Nice to meet you.
Have you used the machine?
Oh, yes.
I see. Now, Mr. Caswell, I don't know how to explain this, but we made a terrible mistake. The regenerator you took was a Martian model for giving therapy to Martians.
I know.
You do?
Yes, it became pretty obvious after a while.
Well, it was a dangerous situation, especially for a man in your condition.
Yes, the poor thing tried its best, but of course it couldn't cure what wasn't there.
Well, then the company will, of course, reimburse you for your lost time and your mental anguish.
Naturally.
And we will substitute a regular human-type regenerator.
Oh, that won't be necessary. You see...
Mr. Caswell, will you put down that gun? I warn you.
I'm not going to shoot you. I merely want to turn this gun over to you.
You do?
Yes, I'm not going to shoot anybody.
You mean that...
The machine's attempt at therapy forced me to reappraise my whole self. There was an insight during which I was able to get rid of my obsession.
You no longer want to kill your friend Magnuson?
Kill Magnuson? Why, I haven't the faintest urge.
Well, I must say, then, that it worked out for the best. I'll get back to the store and have him pick up this machine in an hour. And well, sir...
Oh, don't forget to take this gun. I won't need it.
Of course. Well, nice to have met you, sir. Good evening.
Good evening. Did you hear that? He asked me if I still intended to kill Magnuson. Magnuson, that inhuman monster who cut down my Gorosy. Magnuson, the man who even now is secretly planning to infect New York with abhorrent fiend desire. Am I going to kill him? Oh, no. I wish him a long life, a life filled with the torture I can now inflict on him. Kill Magnuson? Oh, no. I'm going to start right now to dwork him in a blendish manner.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Honorable Opponent by Clifford D. Simak, the story of an Earth general with the distasteful assignment of meeting a delegation of unmilitary clowns who arrive as conquerors. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. In a moment, tonight's cast and a preview of next week's exciting drama.
They took the blue from the sky, then the pretty girl's eyes, and the touch of old glory's pure, and gave it. dream of America's team. We're a rugged and ready crew. And you can bet your boots the world looks up to U.S. Air Force Blue. To U.S. Air Force Blue. We know where we're going. We set our course. The sky's no limit in the air. The blue from the skies and the pretty girl's eyes and the touch of old glory's hue, and gave it to the men who proudly wear the U.S. Air Force blue. We proudly wear the blue, the U.S. Air Force blue.
Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Bad Medicine, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Finn O'Donovan and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Cliff Carpenter, Bill Britton, Alan Manson, Charles Webster, Carl Weber, and Joseph Julian. Norman Rose was heard as the machine. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Bob Maurer and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Weekday, the companion and advisor to America's women, offers a new informative series on childbirth. It's the actual case history of a young wife, following her through the late stages of pregnancy, childbirth, and postnatal care. You'll attend the childbirth courses offered at New York's Mount Sinai Hospital, and even enter the delivery room for the actual birth of the child. Listen tomorrow for the real-life series, The Story of Birth. Then, on the same program, listeners can also enjoy more women's specialties, Kitchen Hints by Charlotte Adams, Child Care News with Dr. Francis Horwich, Vacation Ideas offered by Walter Kiernan, and another personal visit with your radio friend, Mary Margaret McBride. Don't forget the exciting dramatization each day from Taylor Caldwell's book, Tender Victory. Be sure to join Virginia Graham and Mike Wallace tomorrow on this NBC station. Follow the news with Chet Huntley tonight on NBC Radio.
But here on WBAI, women's programming is, well, different. And of course, it's 50 years later, 54 years later, than that broadcast from 1956 of X-1. And yes, Finn O'Donovan, one of the many pseudonyms of the wonderful, fabulous writer Robert Sheckley. This is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and over WBAI.org. This program is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. This is a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, and related fields of endeavor. And as mentioned before, that was Sheckley indeed. And my reason, one doesn't need a reason to play Sheckley. He was just wonderful, and his stories, that was a good example of one. I prefer reading them, but some of them, X-1s, are absolutely, utterly wonderful. There is Sheckley, a couple of weeks ago, it was necessary to mention an anthology of stories by William Tenn, who comes out of the same era. In fact, when the New York Times obit of William Tenn said that Tenn was the only person writing satirical fiction in his era, I had to point out, no, there was Sheckley. Okay. I'm not the two of them were both wonderful, but neither of them, as long as the other one was around, neither of them could claim exclusivity on smart, funny, satirical science fiction and fantasy, because they both did it so well. And let me take time out. We are now going to mention a couple of things, and we're going to turn our Wayback Machine to a more recent time at the KGB Fantastic Fiction Series. But let me mention this Wednesday's coming event, April 21st at KGB. Rick Bowes, Richard Bowes, a friend of mine, I am proud to say, and often a visitor to this radio program. A Nebula nominee this year, a World Fantasy Award winner, also the Lambda Award, the Millions Writer Award, the Horror Guild, International Horror Guild, and just damn good writer, published in FNSF. He has any number of books out. His stories anthologized. Let's get one in Best Gay Stories 2010. He will be one of the readers, and Jeffrey Ford, the other, the fabulous and wonderful Jeffrey Ford, whose recent novels include The Girl in the Glass and The Shadow Year. He has a couple of story collections, The Empire of Ice Cream and The Drowned Life. Both of them have stuff coming in Ellen Datlow's new anthology, The Beastly Bride. And the two of them are good friends and make a fabulous team. So be aware that that is this coming Wednesday. Admission is free. They encourage you to buy drinks because it is a bar. And if you want, hey, get a soda. Why not? The KGB Bar is at 85 East 4th Street. The reading begins at 7 p.m. I advise getting there by about 6:30 because the place fills up, and I promise you it will be full for these two people as well. It should be. Okay. So, in fact, and I will be there recording it, as I always do. And if I'm not there, then writer, editor, poet Gordon Linsner records and supplies me with the recordings. So, but I was there for a reading being done by Alyssa Quitney, Kwitney. And at one point I had looked up Alyssa Quitney, and it was interesting because she wrote for Vertigo Comics, which, you know, which is a branch of DC Comics, but darker. And she had a number of novels with titles like Does She or Doesn't She, The Dominant Blonde, Sex as a Second Language, fun kind of stuff. She even had a Sandman book, King of Dreams, which I thought was rather interesting. But when she showed up at the reading, she introduced herself under the name Alyssa Sheckley. Now, this, of course, raises my eyebrows well above their normal capability. And I asks her, any relation? Yes, daughter. This makes all the sense in the world. Ellen Datlow worked at Omni magazine and became the fiction editor, replacing Robert Sheckley. And Sheckley was her boss for a while. And, of course, she would have known little Alyssa Sheckley. Well, Alyssa Sheckley, you know, wrote her fiction under the name Alyssa Quitney. But upon writing some semi-comic, not semi-comic, I mean, wonderful, wonderful, all you're about to hear, werewolf books, some fantasy stuff, why not follow in her father's footsteps? Her father using pseudonyms all the time. When she's using the name Quitney, well, that was one name, and Alyssa Sheckley another. So her novel, Moonburn, is described at alyssaquitney.com as Alyssa's newest Sheckley book. And I thought, well, I wonder if she can write. I wonder if she can be half as funny as Bob Sheckley. And the answer is, oh, yes. So, let us go to November of last year to the KGB Fantastic Fiction Reading Series. And here, Alyssa Sheckley introduced and subsequently read. And I made the same mistake as last time, so bear with me a moment while I restart. Did I start it? Is it playing? Yes, it is. On the wrong player. Okay, that explains something.
All right.
Okay, there we go. And
you're a bad person. You need to buy books and get them signed.
That sounds like Matt Kressel.
My name is Matt Kressel. I'm the host here with Ellen Datlow of the KGB Fantastic Fiction Reading Series. It's held on the third Wednesday of every month. Thank you for coming. Just a little brief mention of the upcoming readers for the next few months.
Oh, I'll let him talk.
We have December 16th. Andy Duncan and Christopher Rowe.
That was a good one.
January 20th, we have Lev Grossman and David Anthony Durham.
I missed that one, but Gordon recorded it for us.
Lev Grossman's novel is pretty cool, too. February 17th, Peter Straub and Daryl Gregory. So hope you can join us for that. And a bunch of cool people coming in 2010, so I hope you...
I thought he would mention Nora Jemison and Michael Shea last month.
Helps keep the series alive.
And this month, Rick Bowes and Jeffrey Ford.
The bar helps support us. And Barnes & Noble is gratefully selling books in the back. So
actually, they don't do that anymore. Blue Stockings, very cool bookstore, is selling books for them.
Bring it to the author, get them to sign it. It would be really awesome to support the author, support Barnes & Noble, and support basically the whole thing. The whole shebang. So, okay, without further ado, did I miss anything? Oh, yeah, we have a website, as Ellen said, kgbfantasticfiction.org, where you can find out about the upcoming readers. And there's a link there for the mailing list. So if you want to put your email on the list, you can get an email from us.
We only use it for that.
We don't spam you. We don't sell sexual products very often. So you just, it's like once or twice a month you get an email from us and about the upcoming readers.
Yeah, don't forget to join my mailing list as well for the nearest of readings.
Do we have any other announcements?
Send an email to jim@ourwolf.com.
So our next reader is Alyssa Quitney. Alyssa Quitney's most recent novels include, writing as Alyssa Sheckley, The Better to Hold You and Moonburn, a two-part series about a young woman who contracts lycanthropy from her cheating husband. Her next project is a vertigo graphic novel about a little old Jewish lady and the angel of death. Here's Alyssa Quitney.
I'll shut up now.
Hi. Where do I talk into this? Is this audible? Yeah. So I'm very excited to be here. When I first met Ellen, I was very young, and she was very young. She was actually my father, Robert Sheckley's assistant when he was associate at Omni. I was young. I didn't know the difference. I was very, very impressed. And she was very kind to me at science fiction conventions, as I can recall.
It's all wrong.
I started out writing as Alyssa Quitney, which is my mother's maiden name, and at a certain point, I think I frightened my editor and my agent with this book that I'd written, which was a werewolf book, but I'd originally written it before werewolves became so very sexy. And they said, why don't you write it under another name? And I thought, you know, and asked permission back when my father was still alive and giving permission. And he said it was all right to exploit the family name. So Anyway, I am not actually two completely different people. I am, and even though this book looks, I think, like a paranormal romance or urban fantasy, it's a little bit different. The first book, which is, I think, the one they're selling there, tells the story of Abra Barrow, who is a veterinarian who's smart about animals and stupid about men. And her cheating husband gives her a dose of lycanthropy, which in my world is kind of like an STD. And she agrees to move upstate with him. Coincidentally, I left Manhattan and moved upstate. It has absolutely nothing to do with the book. But anyway, when I finally sold it, paranormal romance and urban fantasy had become this huge trend. And I was asked if I would do a second book in the series. And I got very intrigued with what would happen next to Abra up in the country. And at that point, I realized there were certain conventions that had developed to urban fantasy, paranormal romance. One is the kick-ass heroine. I do not naturally write very kick-ass heroines. And the other is this idea that the heroine is sort of man candy, that men are just instantly attracted to her like a bitch in heat. This is not naturally what I write. But I thought, well, this might be interesting to play with, along with the convention of the mousy librarian-like heroine who is transformed. So this is the second book in the series, Moonburn, and in it, it's set mainly upstate, but in this one, my heroine takes a little visit back to New York City, and basically she doesn't realize she's a little irregular in her cycle, first of all, and she doesn't realize that she's coming into heat. And she also doesn't realize that her werewolf cycles are sort of out of kilter. So she gets together with her friend Liliana, who's actually got some secrets of her own, and they're just kind of having a girly day shopping in Manhattan. Or so they think. This is Abra speaking to begin with. Lily, I appreciate what you're trying to do, but the truth is I'm pretty much invisible when I'm standing next to you. As if to prove my point, a businessman stopped talking into his cell phone long enough to give Liliana an appreciative look. We paused at the traffic light, and a souped-up Camaro zoomed past, honking its horn. Baby, called the driver. You looking fine. Liliana tilted her head to one side. What do you mean, invisible? Oh, for crying out loud, Lily, take a look around. I gestured at the cyclist, the construction worker, and the businessman. You're like some kind of crazy man magnet. You can't walk two steps without some guy bugging you. Liliana stared at me as though I were going crazy. Abra, those guys were checking you out, not me. Oh, please. As a general rule, I do not cause men to fall off their bicycles. I pointed to the cyclist who had been too busy watching us to notice the taxi driver opening his door to spit on the sidewalk. The cyclist was on the street rubbing his bruised chin and the driver was yelling at him. Maybe you just don't notice, Liliana said. I put my hands on my hips. Lily, please, don't insult my intelligence. It's perfectly obvious which of us is attracting all the male attention. At that moment, I felt a sharp pinch on my left buttock. I whirled around and saw a young man in an anorak grinning at me as he darted out of the way. Give me a piece of that, he said, as if ordering something from the drive-thru. I'll give you a piece of something, I snarled. You were saying? The light turned green, Liliana took my arm again, and we crossed the street. Hey, said the cyclist, holding up one arm. Hang on. We paused, and he came up next to us, a smooth-skinned young man, a shade or two darker than Liliana. You all right, she asked. Just scratched my knee, he said. Thing is, I think I know you, he said, staring at me intently. I can't remember from where, but I know we've met. I rolled my eyes. Liliana, did you put these guys up to this? Is this the new ego boost? Instead of hiring your own paparazzi, you hire your own stalkers? No, really, I'm not fooling around, said the young man. And then he looked embarrassed. It's just, did you, and I feel this weird connection, like I'm drawn to you. I'm a great believer in listening to the heart, he explained. I'm a great believer in examining the head, I said, moving away from the cyclist. Liliana glanced over her shoulder. So this isn't your typical reaction from the male of the species? It must be a full moon, I said jokingly. Actually, it is, said Liliana, pointing up past the tall buildings at the translucent, swollen moon hanging in the pale winter sky. Almost, I corrected her. It looks full, but it's got another couple of days to go. because she keeps track of the moon cycles, as you would. Have you started carrying around a farmer's almanac? Come on, country girl, said Liliana. Here's the boutique I was telling you about. And there were three outfits in the window, all of them variations on white shirts and slender black skirts. There were also a few shoes, sexy and clunky in the style of the 1940s. The name of the shop was The Sexy Librarian. You're kidding me, there's an entire store devoted to the sexy librarian look? Liliana grinned as she opened the door. You see why I can never leave the city. It was my dream store. There were very few things in the shop, but all of them were perfect. White shirts that were nipped and tucked in just the right places with one-of-a-kind antique buttons. By the way, in the industry, this is known as girl porn. There were little navy dresses that radiated an understated funkiness that was almost but not quite frumpy. And there were racks of 1920s silky tap pants and stockings with seams up the back. The girls are getting excited. And camisoles and pinks and peaches and russets and plums, the color of the sunset as it deepened into night. Oh my God, I said. I want it all. I knew you'd love it, Liliana said happily, throwing things into my arms. Try this and this. Oh, and this. You have to try that on underneath. I ducked into the dressing room and wriggled into the camisole. I was still buttoning up the shirt when I emerged, but I thought I had the skirt on straight. Well, Lily, I said, what do you think? I think it's sort of like that Hitchcock scene where all the birds start roosting together, said Lily. And for a moment, I didn't understand what she was saying, because I was so surprised. The shop was filled with men. There were men crammed on either side of Liliana as if waiting for a dressing room and other men visible behind them checking out the sexy panties. I had seen the occasional hapless fiancé dragged into a store like this, but never a whole group of them. Huh, I thought, must be the new metrosexual fashion consciousness I keep reading about. And then I spotted the cyclist and I realized that something extremely peculiar was going on. I like it a lot, said the construction worker, who had crammed himself into a corner between the businessman, the cyclist, and a bunch of Japanese tourists. Go try something else on, said the cyclist. His voice sounded strained. Excuse me, said the saleswoman, a lovely young Asian woman who wore the sexy librarian look very well, but you're going to have to tell your friends to leave. We just don't have room for this many people. They're not my friends, I protested. I don't know who these people are. Is this some kind of mass protest thing, like when that guy was organizing huge crowds to take off their clothes in public? A slow smile spread over the businessman's pudgy face. You want us to take off our clothes? All right, said the construction worker. Oh, man, said the cyclist, who had snuck behind me to retrieve my slacks from the changing room. I can smell her on these. He took a deep whiff of my pants, and I shouted, hey, and grabbed one of the legs. Stop that, you're being weird, all of you. I need to be upside you, said a Japanese tourist, consulting his phrase book. Inside, he corrected himself, yes? I need to lick you from your toes to your ears, said the cyclist. You touch her and I'll kill you, said the construction worker. That's the future mother of my children you're talking to. Like hell she is, roared the businessman. Liliana ducked under his right arm, which was holding off the hard hat, and took my elbow. I don't suppose you're wearing some exotic new perfume? I'm afraid I am, I admitted, L'air de Estrus. Because it had belatedly occurred to me, there was no other explanation for my sudden transformation from plain Jane to femme fatale. Liliana, we have to get out of here. Well, don't change back into your clothes. You're liable to start a riot. Luckily, most of the men were preoccupied with jostling and insulting each other. The businessman and the construction worker were screaming abuse while the Japanese tourists were getting very red in the face as they shouted clipped phrases at the cyclist and the anorak man. The funny thing was, many of the guys were actually quite attractive. The young cyclist had the clean, strong jaw of a scholar athlete. Two of the Japanese tourists were flat-out handsome, and even the anorak man possessed a kind of thuggish appeal. As the tension escalated and the pushing turned to shoving, I found myself watching with reluctant fascination. There was something primitive, almost primal about this scene. Suddenly, the layers of civilization were being peeled back, and what remained was the essential true nature of each individual. The businessman was now a large male, no longer in his prime, whose outward belligerence masked a reluctance to engage in direct battle. The construction worker, by contrast, was a splendidly muscled specimen, warily circling the young Japanese male, who was bouncing lightly on the balls of his feet and crooning to himself in a softly menacing tone. It seemed to me, trapped as I was among these bellicose males, that there was no choice except to await the outcome. One male would emerge victorious, his skin damp with exertion, redolent of the powerful male hormones flooding through his body. He would be wounded, no doubt, and yet still possessed by all the savage instincts that had allowed him to conquer the other males. He would come to me then, his body thrumming with adrenaline and lust, his mind half maddened by the intoxicating scent of me. But there would be no use of force. I would still have the power to turn them away, to leave them unsatisfied and burning with desire. Where's my wine? Now the construction worker and the Japanese tourist had removed their shirts, and their bare chests were already gleaming with sweat, as the young saleswoman darted ineffectually about, telling them that she had called the police. I wondered vaguely which one it would be, and how long I would make him wait before permitting him to pleasure me. Abra, Abra, snap out of it. Liliana shook me, and I stared at her uncomprehendingly for a moment. We need to get out of here before the police arrive, especially since you may wind up affecting the cops the way you do the civilians. I turned back to the men. But we can't leave, I said, my heart racing with excitement as the cyclist launched himself at the Japanese tourist, who had just taken down the construction worker with a roundhouse kick. Liliana took a deep breath and said, if you don't get out of here now, Abs, you're going to end up becoming the guest of honor at a gangbang. I said absentmindedly. As the
WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM.
It was due to her being the wallflower for once. Not so nice to be the female none of the males even notice. Anyway, that gives you a little taste of the scene, and I hope you enjoyed it.
Okay, that was Alyssa Quitney, K-W-I-T-N-E-Y. All too short, but absolutely wonderful. Enough to make me want to go out and buy her book, despite the fact, not knowing at the time, that she was indeed writing that book under the name Alyssa Sheckley. Under her father's name, using her father's last name, whereas as Quitney, she is using her mother's last name. The full name, in terms of finding her website, by the way, which has a lot of cool stuff on it, is Alyssa Quitney. Sheckley, of course, is Sheckley. And that was from her now-released novel, Moonburn. And I thought that, yes, this was definitely apropos of the continuance of the family name for one of my favorite all-time writers. And so shared it with you this morning. I hope that you have enjoyed it. This is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio at 99.5 FM and at WBAI.org. And this program is available for about, a week and a half or so after broadcast at archive.wbai.org. So you can listen to this, or you are listening to this somewhat after the fact in streaming fashion. The website for this program, by the way, is ourwolf.com, H-O-U-R-W-O-L-F. But it is, out of date. I have to take measures to update it. But there is a redesign being done for us by Chris Dykman, herself a fine writer, and superb graphic work. So she's redesigned my website, and I have to get in touch with her and make that live. Now that our archiving has changed, thanks to the Digital Millennium Copyright Act and Pacifico's current interpretation of it. The show's no longer available on demand for about 6 months, but rather only for about 2 weeks. So the website will have to change to reflect that. And one of the reasons I haven't updated it is because I'm pouting over all of that. But let's move along. What is relevant to you is that the show is available after the fact. Oh, and you can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter. On Facebook, it's my name, Jim Freund, F-R-E-U-N-D. And similarly, actually on Twitter, Jim Freund on Twitter, J-I-M-F-R-E-U-N-D. So I don't tweet a great deal, but I do have a tendency, if I read an article that is particularly cogent to me, sometimes about technology, sometimes retweeting other things that I like, and, you know, just occasionally promoting my show and readings and things like that. Oh, yes, and I'm on Buzz. For those of you that do Buzz, I Buzz. It's a Google sort of superior to Twitter, but it doesn't have as many people on it, certainly. And it's been controversial, but I like it. I think it's got huge potential. But, you know, not every Google thing that has potential gets used, like Wave. I still haven't quite figured out how to use Wave. At any rate, we have about half an hour, and what a good occasion to go sort of freeform with phone calls. I do ask that you be relevant to the topics of this program, science fiction and fantasy, and yes, I will entertain calls on technology occasionally. So the number here at WBAI is 212-209-2900. And we await your calls. I will wait for a few calls to come in, as is my wont. And if you find yourself hanging on for too terribly long, call back, because for some reason our phone system dumps people after a number of minutes. I believe we're going to be switching to a new phone system at some point. We seem to have two phone systems for internal use here. But so hopefully that means we're going to be doing something about that on the air. And speaking of on the air, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm here, and I like the program. Technology. Seeing that we have had that volcano explosion, technology today cannot tell us when those things are going to happen?
No, not really. You can detect certain things within tectonic plates and all that, but no, we can still not predict earthquakes and volcanoes. We can tell when a place is sensitive, when it is ready, but to find out more, I suggest going to, I think it's the NOAA online, which is basically the part of the U.S. government that does weather reporting and such predictions. It's actually the National Ocean something or other. But
oceanography, I think. They
yeah,
call it.
That sounds right. Yes.
Yeah. I understand the theory about the planes flying into this cloud and choking the engines.
Yeah, not a theory, but yeah.
I never heard of it, so I call it a theory. But
It's not a theory. If ash, you know, there's volcanic ash. If that gets into your engine won't work.
It stutter and stop.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. It's going to clog it up. Anything that goes into a jet engine that can clog, and that can be a bird.
A jet engine is like a vacuum cleaner.
Yes.
It pulls in.
Yes.
Couldn't they fly above?
I don't know. I don't know. This is my expertise with technology has to do with more computers and personal technology. So I really can't answer that.
Sorry.
But I would say that most planes, the volcanic ash is huge. It's covering most of Europe.
Yes.
So flying above, the idea is still you're going to have to land somehow, somewhere.
True. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. I'm sorry I couldn't be more helpful.
Okay.
Have a great morning. Okay, and hi there, you're on the radio.
Have a great morning.
Yes.
Hi.
Yes, hey, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
Good, good. Getting back into the groove of listening to your show, which I'm enjoying very much this morning.
Oh, thank you.
Well, let me comment on the first caller, because I like the fact that you had sort of an open line and, you know, technology. And, of course, the literature that you deal with actually deals with, you know, spooky and futuristic machines. But for that caller, I wanted to refer him to... Jim Berklin, who's been a regular, I know him through Coast to Coast AM, but he has his own method as a geologist. And actually, when he was so successful, Jim, in California predicting earthquakes as a part of an official agency, they put him out the office because he, you know, they couldn't deal with the, he didn't go with the conventional wisdom. I think his website is Syzygy. It has to do with the
Syzygy?
Moon. Syzygy, right.
Syzygy.
How do you spell
yeah.
that?
I think you spelt it correctly. I'm not positive myself.
Right, right. But it deals with the moon at perigee and at
Yeah, Syzygy is when things align in a particular manner.
Yeah, and he's been right on the mark. He also... he looks at, in the newspapers, animals like cats and dogs disappearing, and so I just wanted to direct that caller to that. But just getting back to, at some point, I'd like you to mention that digital act. I want to get that act down that's changed the archive so drastically. If you would mention that so I can look it up and actually...
Well, the DMCA, or the Digital Millennium Copyright Act...
Okay.
Came across in the late 90s, and it in most computer-related technologies, it has been laid bare. It was very, very suppressive in many ways and has been fought in courts and in many aspects. It's a huge act. It, you know, covers all kinds of things, what one may put into programs or not, what one may do with their computer. In turn, it was trying to prevent piracy, but it's also trying to prevent, for example, people putting music and sharing music online. So this affects how this radio station streaming its broadcast may be limited. Commercial radio stations have the ability to pay money for, we pay BMI and ASCAP, or actually the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, as I understand it, pays for many non-commercial stations, gets a low rate and pays a fee so that we don't have to take on that burden. But it is a different thing in terms of streaming it on the internet.
Well, and what I'm looking forward to, because I believe I'm myself and other parts of the BAI family, we're looking for the on-air reports and meetings getting back on track, which I understand one is coming up, although it hasn't been promoted, so maybe it'll be a little delayed. But we need to have this whole, and I'm glad you made it, you put it and you said interpretation, Pacifica's interpretation, because...
because it's not necessarily what the law is, but it's rather how Pacifica has interpreted these laws and put them into practice here at WBAI.
Yeah,
and the other Pacifica stations.
Yeah, I think we really have to lay everything out, and I'm looking forward to my fellow listeners and family to come together, and we can we have to do something, because, you know, to 2 weeks it defeats the very purpose of what BAI and Pacifica is all about. And my last point, and of course I'll continue to listen. Oh! Let me find out. How often are your emails? If I'm a subscriber to
Well, my mailing list is really just, it doesn't relate to the radio show. It's about the reading series I produce, and I put out about 2 emails a month.
And let me get that that email.
Jim at ourwolf, HOURWOLF.com.
Right, I have that. Okay, great. And the question that I'm putting out to you and the audience, what difference would it make? Because I follow science fiction, so-called science fiction, to some extent, and, of course, getting into it through programs like yours. But I think this the language is so key, and I like your thoughts around the use of the term speculative fiction, which I think is so much more encompassing, more accurate versus science fiction. I'll listen over the air. Thank you so much.
Oh, okay. Well, why don't you stay on the phone?
Well, because I got to go in the kitchen.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Okay.
No. Love your program.
Okay, thanks so much. Okay, well, I would rather have had a dialogue than just, you know, hold court. But speculative fiction is a term that was coined in the 1940s. I know a lot of people say, oh, it's so au courant and has been used largely in the last 10, 15 years. And that is true that it has been more accepted. But it was actually coined by Robert A. Heinlein, who most people would not describe as progressive necessarily. Some people think he's a libertarian. I think that's debatable, certainly. But he's certainly sparked a lot of libertarian ideas. And it was Heinlein who coined the term speculative fiction for exactly the reason that the woman was calling promoted. Because science fiction is the wrong term for the literature. In David Hartwell's wonderful book, Age of Wonders, a book of essays about science fiction, blah, 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 he has a chapter entitled Why Science Fiction is the Wrong and Only Name for It. And I can't encapsulate that right now, and I also haven't read it in a little while. I should reread it, and I highly recommend it to people who are interested in this kind of thing. But, yeah, science fiction, what we just heard, I would call, is in the field of science fiction. Now, of course, it's a werewolf story. It's fantasy. Some might even say it's a werewolf. It's horror. Where does one begin and the other end? The answer is, right. I always like the Damon Knight definition of science fiction. He said science fiction is what I'm pointing at. And that is what I have always used in terms of this program. Speculative fiction is a more encompassing name. And a very, very good one, and one that I enjoy using very much. And like the listener, I do agree and consider it more apropos. But I've been using science fiction since I was little, as so many people have been. And it is science fiction and fantasy and horror and magical realism and all these other things that can be corralled. Now, speculative fiction is also a loose thing because, after all, isn't all fiction speculative? It is, after all, fiction. This is something I need to remind people of. I was talking to a coworker here in the premiums department. I don't work in the premiums department, but a coworker here at WBAI, where I came in for a meeting earlier this week. And I met this worker, and he, when I said I do program here on science fiction, started talking about various psychic phenomena. Now, you may or may not choose to believe this, and that is irrelevant to the point. But what is relevant is that is not what science fiction is about. Science fiction may involve psychic phenomena. It may be done within the scope of science fiction and psychic phenomena. But science fiction is not that. Psychic phenomena, when people talk about it, they are purporting something to be real. Whether it is real or not, you can debate. But it's not science fiction. It's not fiction. They're talking about something that they choose to agree upon as realistic. Now, you can explore this in science fiction. You can also explore the politics of George Bush, and has been done in science fiction, or Obama, or any social thing or any technological thing. And within the realms of fantasy, any fantastic thing. Even Lord of the Rings very much depicts a mindset that comes out of apartheid South Africa, and is very anti-technology. It reflects the mind and the thinking and the whatever was the persona of John Ronald Reuel Tolkien. So the term speculative fiction, when you think about Tolkien, that's where it sort of falls apart. Is Tolkien speculative fiction? Not really. So that word is not as all-encompassing as you want, even though it is broader than, you know, science fiction and fantasy. So science fiction and fantasy, in my mind, still, while not very good and not very specific, does come closer to what we're dealing with. If, for example, one were dealing with the fiction of, oh, let us say, Mark Twain. Good morning, Simon.
Hey.
And we were talking about, oh, let us say, a time travel story, which Twain was a master of, and so much time travel fiction that was created followed Twain's template. Is that a fair assessment, Simon?
I'd think so.
Yeah, Connecticut Yankee and King Arthur's Court, a must-read for satire. I mean, we've been playing social satire within fantasy and science fiction this morning, mm-hmm. between Robert Sheckley and Alyssa Sheckley. Mark Twain was doing exactly that.
Yeah, you know, Mark Twain, in so many ways, the father of so much of American literature. I think it was Hemingway who said that it all began with Huck Finn. And Connecticut Yankee, you know, science fiction was still in its swaddling clothes then, but he...
And of course the term didn't exist.
You're right. But, it's not exactly but the concept, science fiction, but the
concept,
travel.
Exactly. Yeah. The concept did exist, existed in the days of Cyrano de Bergerac.
Yeah.
Because he was writing, voyages to the sun.
There's a little piece by Twain, I can't remember the title, but written in the 1870s, it's all about a telephone conversation that takes place in the future.
Oh, my God. And so he was writing hardcore science
yep.
fiction. By any definition, mm-hmm. that's what it was.
I'll try to find that for you.
Mm. Please, I'd love to do that. But can we say that Mark Twain was a speculative fiction writer? I don't think so. But I think that we can say that some of his fiction was speculative.
It's one of those terms that is useful and then at a certain point becomes less useful. Because
yeah.
what isn't speculative when you sit down with a pen
exactly.
and say, okay, what happens next?
It's all
next?
Fiction. And I think that, in fact, is the point. It's yeah. fiction. But when we say science fiction, we're branding something. And similarly, I think when we say speculative fiction, spec fic is also a slightly different kind of a brand. It gives you a slightly different feel.
I would say that P.K. Dick, speculative fiction.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's a handy term and sort of says it's more than science fiction. But Dick is Dick. I mean, another category.
He is a category. Well, not unto himself because he has created so many wonderful followings. And people have written in that oeuvre. Michael Bishop, Rick Bowes, lots of people. Rick Bowes, in fact, one of his piece that he is nominated for this year's Nebula Award is entitled "I Needs Must Part," the policeman said, which is, of course, a Dickesque
mm-hmm.
title. Rick won't win that award this year because he's going to be attending the Nebulas down in Florida. And he's won many awards, but he has never won an award for which he has been present. The awards that he has won, he has been an absentee, and since he will be present.
But it could be the great moment that changes everything.
That would be Marvy, wouldn't it?
And by, wish him luck.
Yeah. And by the way, for people who will not be going to Florida, well, I can't say anything yet. Next week, there'll be an announcement about that. All righty. Good morning. You're on the radio.
Good morning.
Hello?
Hi there. Turn down your radio, because we're on delay.
I see. We want Silly Sarah Palin.
Oh, that's a new one. Thank you. Yes, yes. And she isn't so much silly as utterly ridiculous. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Jim. How you doing?
Not too bad. How's it by you?
Bad Wolf.
Yeah, Bad Wolf Bay. What about Bad Wolf?
Okay, I'm just say hello to a fellow Doctor Who fan, and I'm glad that the Russell T. Davies and Julie Gardner brought the dead back to life, because the classic series, I don't know, but when I saw the new series of Chris Eccleston, I said, hallelujah, you're back.
Yeah, I thought Chris Eccleston was absolutely wonderful. David Tennant was fine, and he's a fabulous actor. And I have to say that Matt Smith, I think, is going to bring something to the role that, even though he's so young, even though he's 26, I think he's really going to bring back, between him and Stephen Moffat, a lot of the old pre-21st century Doctor Who stuff.
And by the way, if you ever told me that I'd be rooting for a gay man as a hero in the form of Captain Jack Harkness, I'd have laughed at you, but I really love John Barrowman, and I think he's a really classy actor, and I'm sure he's going to go on to a better and bigger career. And I've seen him in The Producers and other productions. And
I'm annoyed that they're doing La Cage aux Folles on Broadway without him.
Oh, well, you know.
He did it in England.
Yeah.
And it was a huge hit. You can see his performance on YouTube.
Yeah. And I'm glad to hear that they're going to be bringing back Torchwood for a fourth season, but it's going to be very interesting because they're down to Gwen Cooper and Jack Harkness. I mean, who are they going to get to replace the others that they lost?
Now, is this going to be the American version? Because I've heard Torchwood is being picked up for the United States.
Well, I hope to God not, because, you know, like, they really ruined British series like they did with the, not that saying that the, that Paul McGann did a bad job as Doctor Who, but when they Americanized a lot of these British series.
No, Paul McGann was very good. The writing sucked.
Oh, yes. And I did run into Eric Roberts a couple of weeks ago at a convention.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was a nice guy. And my cousin Ted probably tried to do some productions.
I'm sure he's a nice guy, but he wasn't the master.
I know. And I thought John Sims did an excellent job as the master in those last two issues.
Well, you know, John Sims is a wonderful actor. I think he can do virtually anything, but I'm not sure that... I thought he should have played a different Time Lord other than the Master. And you know who's my nominee to play the Master?
Let me guess, Simon Pegg.
No, he's again too young.
Oh.
And not the right dark, dark type. And he already played the Editor. But it is somebody who's already played a bad guy in Doctor Who.
Yes. Who's that?
Anthony Stewart Head.
Oh, yes.
Who played the Schoolmaster. He would make a fabulous Master.
All right. The African American woman, I can't get her name, Freema Armijn. She does an excellent job as Martha Jones.
Yeah, she was great, except the end of Martha, you know, turning her from, you know, it made sense to make her a doctor and maybe she could be attached to UNIT, but then turning her into that kind of a gun-toting action hero didn't work for me.
I think Billy Piper was more believable as Rose Tyler. I mean, here's a common girl who grows up from a teenager into a really kick-butt girl. I think she was an excellent job. Another thing I like about Doctor Who and Torchwood is they make the characters so human. I mean, Gwen Cooper helps save the part of Cardiff, Wales, but when she gets home to her boyfriend, Reese, she says, oh, well, you've done this, but you can't save our relationship. What's the sense of getting married to you, you know, like, and I mean, these people are so human, you can relate to them, you know?
Yeah, well, I'm a big Eve Miles fan, I must say.
Right.
So I'm with you on that. But,
she recently had a child, and I wish her very well on the birth of her new child.
Oh, did she really? Oh, cool. I knew that because, of course, she was pregnant. Duh.
Yeah.
But that's not faked in Torchwood. I think you'll like Amy Pond.
Yes. And I'm definitely going to try to catch the new series tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, right, and there's some show before that, the universe of Doctor Who, which I guess will... I don't know what it is. I've seen the British documentaries leading up to this season, but I haven't seen the American yet, because that will premiere tonight, whereas one can cheat, and I've already seen the first two Matt Smith episodes.
Okay, Jim, I'll let you go, and Bad Wolf, have a great day.
Okay, thanks a lot. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, we have time to sneak in another call. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Great show tonight. I really enjoyed the X-11. I was interested in what you were saying about the DMCA and the possible interpretations of it.
Mm-hmm.
Taking an informal survey of some other New York radio stations, I noticed that WKCR, which is the radio station of Columbia University...
And a wonderful station.
Yes. They seem to totally ignore the DMCA.
Well, are they webcasting?
Yes.
Okay. Because the DMCA here, as it applies to us, is all about the Internet. This application of it is not about broadcasting, but about webcasting and archiving and what is available. I'm not sure that KCR is – that they archive their stuff so that people can hear it later.
This is true. They don't do archives. That.
Yeah, Simon's I'm sorry. You go ahead also.
Is that the crucial factor, whether or not the material is archived?
Absolutely, whether or not it's available on demand after broadcast.
I see. That's an interesting point.
And, you know, because that is the way that people can get it on demand, and you're saying, here's this song, I can hear it now, I can hear it forever, and I can copy it.
What you said is consistent with the difference I was going to point out, which is that WFMU, which is the station of Fordham University,
mm-hmm.
Follows the DMCA to the letter, or as best they can.
I'm sure they do. They're
very
cautious.
And they do have an archiving service.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's interesting. That does clarify some points for me.
Yeah, and it's still controversial. You know, it's how does this stuff happen? This is probably something that's going to... First of all, I think that it will fall apart, but it's going to take years
mm-hmm.
and court cases and stuff like that.
Well, one of the other interesting considerations is that some of the details of the DMCA and how it might be applied are so niggling that
mm-hmm.
it's the kind of thing that can be used as a political weapon.
Absolutely it can be used as a political weapon and has been. And, you know, I like to remind people of not now, but the original creation of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, CPB, one of whose founders is Spiro T. Agnew, was also intended, I believe, one shouldn't just go out and say on the radio, this is a political weapon, but in my opinion, part of the idea behind the original CPB was to reward those who broadcast thinking a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And to neglect to reward those who didn't see things that way.
I will close off, especially since you're running out of time, but apropos of that, I just happened to notice that Bill Moyers is ending his reign.
Oh, is he?
His last show, I think, is something like April 30th.
Oh, my.
He has noted that he will continue to be active with the online version of his show.
And encourages
people to contact him online.
Yeah. Yeah, and something like that is going on in England with the South Bank show that has been broadcast for like 30 years.
Uh-huh. Well,
sounds like things are changing.
Yes, indeed. Good talking to you, Jim.
Likewise. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Okay, well, we have 2 minutes left. And Simon, what is on board for this morning?
We're combining...
Or should I say on the boards?
We are combining the birthday of Mr. William Shakespeare and the centennial anniversary of the death of Mark Twain.
Hmm.
All next week, but we'll give you advance notice now.
Okay. Excellent. Okay, so 600 years of literature. well, is Shakespeare literature? Yeah. Yes, it is. I mean, it's theater.
It's speculative.
It certainly is. You know, Midsummer Night's Dream. What? You know, what's up with that, as they would say. What fools they be. Anyway, next week on this program, it happens every spring. Sam Butler, S.C. Butler, fine speculative fiction writer. A writer, so far, his stuff has been fantasy. I believe his next work will be closer to science fiction or spec fic. And just a wonderful, neat guy and a huge baseball fan. And it has been a lot of fun having him on the air to discuss baseball and fantastic fiction. I don't know if that will be our topic next week, but it's certainly something we will touch upon. Ken Gale needs to know that baseball and Spec Thick will be on board on this program next week with Sam Butler being the guest.
All right.
And Ken is taking it back. But we have to do birds.
My first published fiction was baseball.
Oh, cool. And where did you publish that?
That was published by Warren Publishing back in 78 or 9 or, I don't know, something like that.
Very cool, yeah. Yeah, I remember some very woolly. There was one anthology that I don't know where I have it anymore, but it was absolutely fabulous of really weird spec fic science fiction.
Talk into the mic.
Yeah, well, that's because this mic is supposed to be a cardioid. It is supposed to pick up wherever I face.
No, it's very limited so that it doesn't pick
up the
other mics.
I didn't say it does. I'm saying it's supposed to. It's a different deal altogether than what it does.
Now, there's a reason it does what it does.
Okay. At any rate, I've got like 10 seconds.
Yes, 10 seconds. So.
And in those 10 seconds, let me tell people, tune in next week for Sam Butler. The week after that, Ellen Kushner will be here. So
you do have good guests on your show, Mr. Freund.
It happens. It happens. And next week, as I said, it happens every spring. Speaking of a spec fic science, a spec fic movie on baseball starring Ray Milland.
Cool.
So do your homework. Which involves Ray Milland, Mark Twain, and William Shakespeare, and Ken Gale, for that matter. Thank you, Alyssa Quitney, a.k.a. Alyssa Sheckley, for the reading that we broadcast this morning. And, of course, her late father, Robert Sheckley, for all the fabulous fiction that he's done through the years. Stay tuned for As I Please with Simon Lokely, and enjoy yourselves. Have a good week.
Bye. And you are tuned to WBAI in New York City. 99.5 on your FM dial. And good morning, and hello, and welcome once again to As I Please for this, the 17th day of April in the year 10. And I will open this morning with another fervent plea for justice. Yes, we seek justice, but in the Pacifica mold, a very partisan kind of justice. Yes, there is justice that applies to all, and then there are those specific points of justice which we would like to address. And this plea for justice came about as I discovered this week that the cost for a carriage ride in Central Park will soon be going up to, I think, something like $45 or $50 for the first half hour. Wow, said I to myself. And then, reading on, I discovered that, yes, they may be horses, but someone is taking care of them. For the horses who work in Central Park, it is forbidden for them to pull a carriage when the temperature is below 20 degrees Fahrenheit. For those horses who work in Central Park, it is forbidden for them to carry or drag a carriage when the temperature is above 90 degrees Fahrenheit. If you are a horse employed in Central Park, you are guaranteed 5 weeks of vacation per year. And so I appeal to you, my fellow humans, and of course, horses now listening. As a New York City tour guide, I seek only the courtesy extended to horses. Is that asking too much? No, for it is clear that for a human to work aboard a bus, top of a bus, when the temperature is 90, 95 degrees, baking in Times Square, this is a hazard. And when it is below freezing, aboard a bus, 'tis much, much colder. So I say, we only ask for the courtesy, the dignity, the respect that horses receive. As you may can think of tour guides as being nothing more than a bunch of yahoos, but I assure you, we hope to become more and more like a weenum. By gum, by gosh, by golly. Now, I think that there is good reason for this, and perhaps this will be the clout necessary. Just this past week, the exhibit as such per se, opened a couple of weeks ago. You may have heard about it. It's called Event Horizon, and it is around Madison Square Park. And there are, I don't know, a score of statues atop buildings looking like jumpers, really. Well, you know, people are beginning to notice and people are beginning to talk. I merely shrug. But somebody asked our mayor, Mayor Mikey, what do you think about this art show? And he said, well, you know, I'll tell you, it's a great thing and it brings tourists to New York because people around the world are talking about this. They're all going to come to New York and look at this thing, which... You can imagine, after all, it's really just a bunch of male mannequins in odd places. However, be that as it may, he made a specific point of saying that this will be good for the New York City tourist industry, which is number one in New York City. That is our main cash cow. Consequently, Mayor Bloomberg, I say, if indeed you are planning to invite more people to visit New York City, then by gum, it behooves you to take care of those nitwits bums and loafers whose job is to guide him around. And once again, am I asking too much? I think not. Well, PETA made a big deal in getting better working conditions for horses. Alas, there seems to be no organization, People for the Ethical Treatment of People. However, I know deep down that the tour guide is going to have a hard time of it because, you know, thanks to PETA, and I want to make this very clear, thanks to PETA, all sorts of things treating animals have changed. And you probably want to know what happens to a tour guide when he is retired, or when he's too old and toothless to continue giving good tours. I'll tell you, comrades, old tour guides are boiled down into glue. And I know this is true, and because a lot of the buses I work with are held together by glue, and it's that cheap tour guide glue that has no stickum to it. Oh, well. Rights for tour guides. A dream. A dream. And we dream on. Good morning. Welcome aboard. How are you today? I ask. I care. But since there is no way for you to tell me, I'll just assume that things are just ducky for you this morning. And a foggy morning it is. Why, Brooklyn is virtually invisible this morning. Well, we open, as always, with the Count Basie Orchestra. A tune that features the great Herschel Evans as the solo saxophonist. And I would now like to play a little bit more from the Count Basie Orchestra as part of our ongoing education purposes here, to teach you to recognize and appreciate the sound of Lester Young. Now, a little while ago, I sort of
did a Lester Young birthday tribute, or Lester Young tribute. It was for President's Day, actually. And at that time, I went out at an enormous expense to myself, bought a collection of Young and Basie tunes, and I've been bringing it with me every week since then, because it's a good thing for you to listen to Lester Young, and it's an even better thing to be able to recognize Lester Young. And at that, on that famous, in that notorious President's Day program, I gave you a bit of information which I had only recently learned, that the first surviving recording of Lester Young was with the Count Basie Orchestra in a tune called Shoeshine Boy. And though the Prez had been at work for a good 10 years beforehand, it just seems that one of those strange things, he was never there in the studio when they were recording. Now, what I want to play this morning are two versions of Shoeshine Boy. You know, there is a common statement in radio and so on, common statement, I've heard this a lot from people, that the first take is always the best, which is simply not true. Why, I can give you numerous examples where the first take is not the best. But because there is an encouragement of laziness in this world, a lot of people are going to be satisfied with the first take because the second take has a stumble or a bumble or a fumble. But then there's always a possibility of a third take. Well, in this case, we have but two takes of Shoeshine Boy. And I am presuming that the one I am about to play was the first take. And I will play both takes, although there will be a little bit of a delay between them, so that you can hear. Now, I don't think I need to go on at length about the brilliance of Lester Young an improviser, as a tunesmith with a rich and warm sound and a great sense of humor. I mean, there's a lot of times where you just got to laugh out loud when you're listening to Prez. And so I thought that this might help sharpen our hearing skills, our listening skills, by listening to what was probably the first time the band got together. And one of